You back on the record, Miranda? Are you back?
Thank you. Appreciate everybody's patience. Welcome. I see Mark Davis, MWH, and I see Golden Valley. So please state your name for the record and look forward to the presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mark Davis, and I'm the leader.
Board, Mr. Chair, Chris Brown, MWH.
Rick Adcock, MWH.
Good morning, everyone. Corey Borgeson, Golden Valley Electric.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks for having us again. We're pleased to be here to update you. Mike, don't worry. They missed you on the roll call, but we know you're here. glad to be here. And as was mentioned earlier, we're joined by several colleagues from Kiewit, who will be speaking in a little while in support of their activities here. Don LeMoyne from Houston. Thanks for coming up, Don. Eddie Burdon. And Alan Snyder up from Lenexa. So thanks, guys. It was a long trip, but we're glad you're here. Of course, Corey Borgeson of Golden Valley is here with us today. And we're also joined by the MWH Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Alan Krauss. And Alan may say a few words here.
Just a couple words. It's a great pleasure to be here. Come up.
Good morning.
All right. Yeah,
I will know that Alan is a Diamond High School graduate. So basketball extraordinaire.
Is that okay?
Okay. Born in Denali Park.
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank the board and Mr. Chairman for.
Anyone else on the line? Yeah. I really got disconnected or muted.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. You're unmuted.
All right. Well, I just wanted to reinforce the importance of this project to our company at the highest level. We are excited to be part of it. We know the urgency is behind it. We know the importance to the interior. My commitment to the board is to make sure that we have the resources and the talent applied and put the effort into it. As the chairman said, I have a personal interest in the sense that I was born and raised here, actually born in McKinley Park. It's called McKinley then, not Denali. And grew up here, so it's a personal opportunity to see something done really well for the state. So I'm really excited about it. We have a lot of people here in the room, and we put a lot of energy into this in the past, and we're excited to push it forward. So that's all my comments, and I'll let the team take over.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Now, can I go back?
Now, you guys realize our CEO is watching us here?
Yes.
We'd like to be under the radar more on this, but that's how important this project is.
I'm more worried about the guy on your right.
Yeah. That's why we have you.
Close.
But that really reflects how important this project is to us. You know, we take it, put a high priority on this project, and as Alan said, the resources that we need are being applied to it. It's a complex project. You all have worked with this for a long time now. You know that better than I do. And we very much appreciate the challenge ahead of us. But as Ted said, the next 3 months are going to be very critical as we drive toward financial close. And that's the goal, is to get to financial close. And in order to get there, we have to have all sorts of technical questions answered and all sorts of commercial agreements agreed to before the money comes to the table. But that's the point, and that's where we're driving right now towards. So today we're going to overview three topics. They're up there already. Good. First off, the overview of the process for getting the financial close. We'll go through a whole series of timelines that detail each of the steps that we're going through, what the critical path is, where the milestones are, and how they all integrate to get us to financial close in the fall, early fall. We'll talk about our progress and path forward on system integration. By that, we mean the entire supply chain of this project, starting with the gas in the ground on the North Slope and ending with delivery into Fairbanks and everything in between. And finally, we'll focus on the plant itself, the LNG plant itself, and talk about where we are on the commercial agreements and the early works, which Kiewit will address as part of their presence here. We had a site visit last week. We took Northleaf Capital, the managing director, and a vice president up there, and there were several folks from MWH. We went to the site. We met with several folks from the BP operation, learned a lot, And so we continue to move things forward. We've been spending a lot of time up in the community in Fairbanks, working with potential off-takers. Annie Broughton, who's here, is leading that effort for us. So we'll be going through all these parts as we go through the presentation. So next slide, Ted.
Okay, thank you. And with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk about the process of getting to financial close. And when we come and typically update the board, we talk about the things that are going on and show milestones and schedules and so forth. But in conversation with ADA staff, we want to recognize the importance and want to present kind of how it all fits together, because as you know, there are a lot of different parts and pieces that are have to come together in a very orchestrated way in order to get to the end point, in this case financial close. And so that's what I'm going to talk about, and so I'd like to begin with the end in mind, which is at financial close. On the board here you see kind of the primary documents and information that are going to have to be in place in order to close the deal. And there's a lot of information there that that has to come together. And these items are very interdependent. Even though we talk about them as individual parts, they're very independent, or they're very dependent. And a very good example of that is the offtake agreements are shown there at the bottom, but all of the items above it all produce information or documents or agreements that inform those offtake agreements, and so they have to come together. So even though that's not necessarily shown here, it's true. It's very there's a lot of dependency, and so but in order to get to that offtake agreement, there has to be a gas price, there has to be OPEX and CAPEX for the LNG plant, there has to be trucking and storage costs known, whether they're covered by the distribution utility or by somebody else like MWH, they have to be known. That people have to know where the gas is going to go, right? And so that needs to be known. And of course, the purchaser has to know their own distribution costs to get to the meter price. So how do all these things come together? So if you go to the next slide, what I've done here is to start is to put up each of those items and show it on a timeline. There are milestones on it, on each timeline, and I'd like to point out that we've simplified this a lot. There are many more things going on, but we've simplified this greatly and just listed the primary activities that we want to talk about to illustrate getting to financial close. So one of the important things to note is that over time, the uncertainty decreases, or the certainty increases around each of these activities. In the beginning, you're going to start with feasibility level costs and then move to indicative costs that are based on estimates, and then ultimately you end up with firm costs that are suitable to base commercial agreements on, or contracts. And it's that interplay of these increasing certainty that allows the process to move forward. Like I mentioned earlier, the optic agreements, it's this long timeline, and then there's only a single milestone at the end that says final. And what's missing there is the understanding that, or the information, the milestones, the information generated that will be used in the optic agreements comes from the other activities. But before I get into how that works, I want to make a few comments about the graphic that you see. The graphics that are kind of more of a whitish color with a brown.
Don't touch it.
There we go. Yeah, it'll explode. These are activities that are the ADA is involved indirectly. So, for example, those are indicative cost and schedule. Those are early works activities that Hewitt just began. Final cost is part of that process as well, and that's shown. The gas supply agreement is something that ADA is working on. That's what those icons mean. The red ones are things that NWH is working on, and these purple icons up there are represent information that comes from another place. So in this case, there are recommendations that come out of the IEP system integration that would be used to generate the contracts associated with trucking and storage. And then there at the bottom, that big gold-colored icon, of course, is financial flows. Any questions before I move on? Clear enough?
Eric? Chris, what is the significance of orange?
Very good question, and I'll get to that. Since you asked, the system integration process is intended to bring together all the primary development stakeholders, the utilities, ADA, MWH, and confirm how the entire LNG supply chain will best work as a single integrated unit. And so there's a decision process in there that we'll go through that will inform how that is best done. And so at the end of that process, it may be that the best way to do, for example, the trucking is for an independent, a different entity to be formed. And so what that orange signifies is that it may or may not be MWH or somebody else that does it. It will be determined. And that orange color indicates that it is somehow different in that way, if that makes sense.
So green is MWH responsibility, and orange may or may not be.
Correct. And the green really is timeline. Blue signifies the past, green the future. The red is generally MWH's activities, so the icons indicate that. And then the orange, just as a way to emphasize to the audience that activity is to be defined and somehow different, that's the purpose of the orange, is to highlight that, to draw the attention to it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so,
Michael?
Chris, I realize this is very simplified, but in your off-take agreements, you've got appointed final in October, but I'm assuming you have early indicative work where you're getting rounded ideas of what people may or may not be looking for in that offtake agreement to support what ADA is doing in EPC and gas supply contract negotiation.
I'll
jump into that. Absolutely. And in fact, he's leading that effort for us. We've got term sheets and an SPA agreement. And we're working with the utilities right now, some more actively than others, but we're trying to get all the utilities to the table to help us understand their demand profiles, the timing. We're not going to have a price to give them yet. We can, because we can see it's all interactive. And so as we move down the curve, we can take a range of price that's here and continues to narrow. So that when we get to this endpoint, the process should follow that we've got terms and conditions that are pretty well agreed up until that last final price, which we're not going to have until just before closing. But we'd be ready to sign the documents there, so absolutely. And we're working now with industrial, federal government, in addition to utility off-takers.
And just on that, Deputy Commissioner, that we are also MWH, and working with us is we find a very complicated financial model that all these things are going in. So as we get ranges of costs, they can plug those into the model, and the model will give us the estimated cost, and these are being shared and worked on with the utilities also as we go through that process of getting these offtake agreements.
So your goal, Chairman, if I might, is to have term sheets, SPAs done so that when you're working towards close, it's really just around pricing.
Exactly. That would be our preferred process for doing it, and we're encouraging all the off-takers to follow that process
and,
with
and
us.
And if I get this Mark Davis for the record, the reason for that would be that the concession agreement is executed. Now, it creates the legal structure. So that's done. And so the normal deal where you have financial close where you're looking at all the parameters at once, here you'd actually have the legal parameters done, agreement, and then you'd be working on the price. And so that lets us shift into that, which is the real issue, shift into that hard as soon as possible.
And, Mr. Chairman, I got one more question. Is in your offtake agreements, we have, for example, Golden Valley, you have some groups that don't have the same level of public or board review. If you're working with industrial consumers, they might be able to act quicker. In terms of this timeline, what are we building in for the process that your offtake customers have to go through within their organizations to get approval?
We will definitely build that into the process, is what I would say. If you know, when we get to the price, we'll be at the price, so that'll be our go signal. But we'll want to make sure that we're scheduling things so that we've accounted for, you know, the board approval process. It could be the next board meeting, in your case, for example.
Yeah, telegraphing of what is coming is a very important
But that's a good point. In terms of the schedule, that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Okay. Gary?
So where on that chart, I struggle with how you can do offtake agreements and commercial agreements all happening in the same week. Where on that chart is the sentence completed, the cost of gas is going to be blank to GVA, to IGU, to FNG, first week in October?
Yeah, for October 3rd is where the EPC final, you know, per fixed price will be. And there are other similar dates for the other cost components. And so, so if I may, we can move on to the next slide, and it'll start to become clear how this process will work, because I'm going to show the dependencies or how information developed in one activity will inform or flow down to others. So, Ted, if you want to go to the next slide.
If I could just try to understand this.
Sure.
If you don't know the price of what you're selling until the first week in October, how can you start offtake agreements the first week in June?
It's a really good question, but I think there's a good answer to it as well, in that the SPA, for example, is quite an extensive contract. It's sort of typical of commodity offtake contracts, and there's a lot of terms and conditions in there that don't really depend on price, and you can start with a range. And we'll have a range right here when we get our indicative prices on CapEx, and then somewhere around here, we're starting to get costing on operations at the same time. And all this continues to be refined as the engineers and operators start getting to know the project better. And you have to give that process time to ripen before you can actually give a firm price. But what you do is narrow that range of prices you're giving to the off-takers. So basically you've got, hopefully by this point around in here in September, pretty much the agreement done, except for some conditions precedent to closing, which include the price is going to be in this range that we specified, and if it's not, then you know we have to reopen this. But that's how you're driving, and you're trying to get everything to come together for closing. And on this accelerated schedule that we're working on, you just have to do it that way. And as you become more certain with the terms that you can offer, you get there.
So then Ted and I got into this discussion about the requirement of IGU and FNG to make commitments, paper pays by July 15th. That's now gone away. That isn't going to happen now until third week in October.
Well, so it's a process whereby you get into a dialogue and you say, okay, how much gas do you want and when do you want it? And we're very much in that now. In fact, that's part of what the IEP system integration is designed to do, is to figure out in a very detailed way exactly that question. And so the idea of how much gas somebody wants, we will know that way before closing. So you get, okay, how much gas do you want? okay, here's the range of costs. We're talking about the terms and conditions of the takeoff agreement. And then as you go, things start to firm up, and then you hit a milestone, and you've got better cost data. So all of a sudden, your range of potential costs narrows, right? And that provides a very good opportunity for everybody to say, okay, are we still on track? And are we going to be able to get to the next step with a greatly reduced chance of a surprise? And then you continue to refine, and then when the final cost comes in, that's kind of the, you know, among the last thing, the conditions precedent to closing that have to occur to seal the deal, because you've got the other details worked out previously.
So, Chris, back in February we were told, and I'm not being critical, I'm just trying to understand, we were told that I think the commercial agreements were going to be done by May 31st, which I think we all looked at our shoes and said, well, okay. If that's the case, that date now is the third week in October.
End of October.
Okay.
One thing I just wanted to say, Gary, is I think if, as you can see, the ranges are really going to become clarified at the start of August. And part of what Chris is talking about, to get the final cost in October, you have to have the demand. Because as I always said, if people don't commit, that gas price is going to be very high. If people commit, for example, and if I'm too simplified, Chris, because I'm just a poor accountant here, like I tell you, is that, you know, most of these costs, for example, a large part of the full operating costs will be property tax. It's going to be in the millions. And then we have the operating costs are going to be semi-fixed too. So you got $5-6 million of semi-fixed costs. So if it's only over 4 BCF, then that's going to be a higher cost than it would be if it's 6 BCF. So as you get to those final ranges they're talking about, the commitment by the utilities on their take or pays roll into what that final cost that people can commit to too. So,
you know, the reason we need to know things like demand, how much demand is there? And when I talk about demand, I'm not talking about potential demand or demand that is going to be in the future, even if it's relatively certain. It's how much demand is going to be in the form of committed take-or-pay agreements at financial close so the deal can go forward. And at some point, we've got to say it's going to be this much, because then that rolls into all kinds of other things like the sizing of the plant and how the plant's operated and the amount of storage you need. And you've got to set those variables and lock them in order for the rest of the process to move forward, because you can't get to near the close and have somebody come in and say, oh, I want a bunch more gas, because then you've got to cycle all the way back and start again.
But they aren't going to tell you how much gas they want until you tell them what it's going to cost. And you can go through this 2 or 3 month period of meetings and winks and nods, but it gets to the end, somebody's going to have to say to GVA, it's going to cost you X.
Yes. And so as the project advances and things like what the plant is going to look like, what the design is, how the operations are going to work, you can get more and more certainty around cost. And at certain milestones, you narrow the cost band. Mm-hmm. And so in the price band, yeah. So when you get to as far as a take or pay agreement goes, you have a placeholder there that says, you know, this is the band, and the condition precedent to closing is, if the number comes in, you know, as planned, then closing goes forward. You know, so it's you got to wait till the end to see what the actual number is. But if you do the process right, you move forward with increasing certainty around how much things are going to cost and all the other project variables. And so that's how you can advance the project without knowing the exact number. But still, when the exact number is known, you're because you've got everything else worked out, you can close quickly.
Or if it, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Maybe this will help a little bit.
Maybe we should have had a diamond on there, an offtake agreement somewhere by in the middle of July, end of July, where we had preliminary agreements executed. Because I would expect that we're going to come to Golden Valley and say, we need a commitment. Is it 2B? Is it 2.5B? What is it? And it'll be an agreement that we sign, I get to my board, and then it'll be a condition preceding. It'll say, based on a price of this, that we won't know until October. So it's, and you've got an agreement from Fairbanks Natural Gas to make the decision on by July 30th.
But it has and flexibility to...
No, but I wouldn't give them any flexibility. They're going to have to tell us by July 30th whether they're going to take a half a B or not.
Based on a range.
Based on a range. And I think that that's the best we can do at this time. I mean, the reality is, this is a very tight schedule. Mm-hmm. This project's been on a very tight schedule all along. But this is how we'll be able to do it going forward here in this very short time frame.
So if you're asking FNG and IGU and you and GBA to commit to make a contract based on a range, not a price, at a point certain, July 15th or whatever. Is that what we're saying now?
That's what I would anticipate will happen. And I think that's what you've been saying. So, is that
actually, can we, not to interrupt the question flow, can you go to the next slide? Because I think you'll find it interesting. I hope you'll find it interesting about how the dependencies work. So now...
I just have one question myself.
Sure.
How do you plan on handling at the once the plant comes up and is operational, the lag time between the volume that you anticipate versus the volume that's at the start of the plant? In other words, I assume there's going to be a buildup in the marketplace, right? And so how are you folks looking at that delta between maybe 3B and 5B or, in that time frame from an economic standpoint? And does the board need to be concerned about that? Or is that going to be put into the price of the initial gas?
That's actually where ADA comes in the way that the capital stack has been arranged, and that was sort of the way it was designed, in that if we've got a 6B plant, let's just say, and we've signed up a certain amount of offtake, which we expect to grow for year one, which we expect, say, I'm just going to throw numbers out, there's nothing here except an example. So let's say we signed up 4B of offtake for a 6B plant. Now, that's going to create a certain amount of cash flow from that plant. The way the capital stack works is that the private investor, Northleaf Capital, is senior in that capital stack, which is, not the way it's usually done, but that was the whole point of the ADA contribution and where you come in subordinate. So that means that even though we haven't maxed out the capacity of the plant, there's enough cash flow to pay off the private investor. And so it's operational and it's cash flowing and everything works from a financial standpoint. And as that demand grows in years 2, 3, 4, and 5, then you start servicing the ADA portion of the capital stack as the cash flow increases to that point.
So I think he's saying, yes, Chair, that based in the price, the price will ensure the cash flow that's needed to build up that.
So where on that timeline will we get that number at the end?
Which the number
of how much we have to subsidize the initial years before ADA gets a return on that investment?
You'll get a good idea of it as we move through the summer, but you'll get the final number at the end. Whatever is the final number for
financial. It'll be right in here. Oops, and it'll be right in here. And the slide after this, I show where decision points are, and one of the decision points includes answering that exact question. You can sit down, you know what your demand is, you know enough of the variables that you can start pulling the financial levers in order to figure out how the financing is actually going to work. And that's when you really get a clear view of, how much money is going to have to go into it, what the interest rate is going to have to be, and so forth.
All right.
But let me talk about this slide a little bit.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I
go ahead, Mike?
Throw one thing out, and it's I just would encourage the board to think in the near term beyond the price, some experience around these things today, in my other life, 3 months to negotiate all the terms and conditions amongst lawyers. With all due respect to all my friends in the room. Price aside, just coming to agreement on those precedent agreements, the terms and conditions of each of those contracts, a lot of that work, and I think 3 months is incredibly aggressive for that, much less the price setter. So you need to spend your time, and I hope they are, their time driving to close on those hundreds of pages of documents in this time period.
And that's one reason we're going for the concession agreement early, that creates a financial structure for this project on the capital stack, which then plugs in the price. So that's got to be done first. It's got to be allowed. It's a long document, and we'll work on it. There will be other long documents, and again on your side, on the SBA. So as Rick said, that's all coming together, and it does take time. So there will be probably, as Corey indicated, ranges and conditions present, right?
That's what I would anticipate.
Let's say that, and this is consistent with the FNG agreement between ADA today, that we've asked them for an agreement, but within, you know, for to say how much they would take in a range, because they're looking for commitments to size the plant, because the fixed cost can be adjusted by the operating cost given the design of the plant. So the model, right, is taking in all those factors. But the time for negotiation, as you point out, is exactly right. It's work, and the lawyers are going to be heavily involved in trying to come to agreement.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that definitions of force majeure, what happens in interruptions, all of those commercial times between all the parties are going to be incredibly detailed in doing it with multiple groups, and they have different interests.
Yeah.
Just that 3 months price aside, that alone is a massive undertaking.
Go ahead, Chris.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris, I didn't see you.
One of the things I just suggest, if you could put a key at the bottom so we can better understand all the players beyond this meeting, I think it will really help
sure. A
lot of players understand. So on the 26th of June, we've got a resolution coming before us. And from what I'm hearing, that's a legal commitment that ADA's going to take and some financial commitment that we're going to bring forward in hope that we'll have commitment from the other parties. Is that correct? So we're going to commit financially and legally the 26th of June to push it forward. But we're not assured that the other entities involved are going to have that same buy-in.
And I think there'll be conditions precedent to those others.
And the concession agreement is the agreement that we're saying if everything happens, that this is the way we're moving forward. Because the critical thing, again, is the concession agreement gives you a path forward, how it's going to work, which gives, like Mark said, how takeoff agreements have to be created based on this. But the financial close, the final commitment to the project itself will be in October. So the concession agreement is the agreement that how we would work together.
Okay.
It doesn't say that we are going forward until we have a gas supply contract. The MWH, the project company, hands that these are the takeoff agreements, and we know how much the project's going to cost. So, again, it's the way we're agreeing, this is the way we're going to work together with the project sponsor company as we go forward, but there won't be a final decision until we know, again, all the things that Chris said, how much the plant's going to cost, whether or not we have commitments to take the gas from the plant we're building, and that flows into that financial close.
It's like the house is under contract, and if we can pass the inspection and line up our financing, we'll close. So that's
and to your question that you ask about, we enter into a concession agreement, MWH and ADA do, and there are certain conditions precedent in that have to be satisfied in order to close, and those are things like the the off-take agreements have to come together. There has to be a contract for the operation and the building of the plant and so forth. And that's represented here. There's the concession agreement signed on June 26th. And then the conditions precedent are clear here, and that supports going to close. But with your permission, so what I'm trying to show here is that as the activities move forward, for example, an EPC in early works, you get to an indicative costing schedule here. This is, we get it on the schedule for the 11th of July. We'll take a little time to look at it, make sure we it makes sense, if we have any questions, so it becomes kind of firm and accepted on the 18th of July. And then that, plus the updated cost from operations, those two bits of information come down and now inform the offtake agreements. And so it is, you know, the same thing with the recommendations go final for the system integration, and that's July 25th. And that also, that informs both the procurement of trucking and storage, but also that information comes down here. So this is an example of, in this time frame right here, all of a sudden you have a much increased certainty around the cost elements that are associated with trucking and storage operations and building the plant. And then your gas price, you know, the gas supply agreement, oops, I keep touching it. The gas supply agreement is finalized here on June 30th, and so you've got the gas price, you've got how much it's going to cost to build and operate the plant, or at least a tighter range of costs. And so at that point, all of a sudden, you go from feasibility level estimates, which you've had for some time, to a much more certain indicative cost that's based on the project as it is really planned to be built and as it is really planned to come together. It's not just, you know, how it might come together, which is what you deal with at a feasibility level. So that's a very important time frame. July 18th to the 25th, that's a zone in time, a period in time when a lot of information comes together, and that allows the board, ADA, and all the players the opportunity to look at much firmer data and to make decisions about going forward, decisions about funding, decisions about how things will work. So these circles around the points just mean that carries down to ultimately the purple icon where the information is used. So indicative level costs come in here. Those that band is narrowed down to a final cost here right at the end. In the meantime, for example, the takeoff agreements, you're in a process of negotiating the other terms, which started back in March, and we've been moving through all along. Does that make sense? So the next slide, we wanted to talk about these zones or these periods in time when the decision points, basically, and those are highlighted in yellow. And so the first one is coming up. It's the time frame between June 26th and June 30th. And what happens then is that the concession agreement is signed. That's the intent. Mark Davis was just talking about that. The gas supply contract should be in place. That's June 30th. In addition to that, the draft recommendations around the IEP integration are scheduled to be done. And so that gives the board an opportunity to look at, you know, at that time, are we under contract? What are the costs for moving forward beyond this point? That's pretty close to the June 26th board meeting. And so the budget, further commitment from ADA to fund the move, you know, continuing to move forward, whether it be procurement of long lead items or things like that, that information will come prior to that board meeting. You'll know it at the board meeting. So you'll know you've got a decision point, you've got You know what you're committing to, and you'll know the status of, you know, are we moving forward and making progress and getting more and more committed to the project. So the second one, like I said, comes in between July 18th and July 25th, and that's when your indicative costs are known for operations, for EPC, and then also for trucking and storage.
Mr. Chair, Chris, when you say indicative cost, what's your plus or minus you're picking there?
Well, for example, the EPC indicative cost is plus or minus 20%. So it's a class 3 estimate. And, you know, that's the level. And an important point is that it's an estimate based on a much better defined project. It's the project as it's going to be planned to be built. It's not an idea. All of this is designed to drive to commitments. People are going to actually commit to the plans. Right.
In essence,
I think that's a very important point.
We'll have pretty much a pre-FEED design done on how the plant would look, how it's going to operate. At that point in time,
yeah.
I'm sure Don will.
How the plant will operate, how it will, the amount of storage, how the trucking will work, exactly. And then the next point in time comes. Actually, let me back up half a step here. One thing I wanted to point out is right in this range here, right in this time zone, when much more is known about how the plant will operate, how much storage is needed, and then therefore how the trucking regime would work, right? And so that allows an opportunity for decisions made around, if there is a way to do trucking that involves an entity set up that might, consist of, a group of utilities or whatever idea, that's where those kinds of decisions or ideas can really be informed by the technical information. Who's gonna do the storage? What is the best approach for financing it? And then also in the contract negotiations last week, we talked about the importance of getting to the point where we can sit down and really better understand the details of the financing, exactly how much CEPS loan money will be needed, into a higher level of certainty. And that's where that opportunity to do that exists. At that point in time, there's a lot more definition around the project can occur because costs are much better known.
Okay.
And so, like with the take, and
Chris,
I
just want to stay on that slide. So,
sure.
Just to prove that I've never met a dead horse that I can't beat one more time. In July, those arrows drop down, and I understand those two purple boxes. You're going to go to at least three different people and say, we want some commitments from you. How much gas are you going to sign up for? And as I understand it, you're going to say, and the range of that is going to be between this much and that much at the meter, right?
We're not accounting for distribution costs.
Okay, so that price that you go to those three folks, those two boxes, is at storage?
It's really where they want to take it. If they want to take it at the plant, it can be described at the plant.
FOB Dead Horse or FOB Fairbanks.
If they want to take it in Fairbanks, it can be described.
Okay. But we thought it was ominous that the place is called Dead Horse, speaking of feeding this
thing. So they're going to say to you, well, what's it going to cost me? And you're going to say, well, it's not going to be less than this, it's not going to be more than that. Right? But they're not going to sign anything.
because at least one of the people that you're going to talk to has an option to go somewhere else, and they're not going to sign on that until they compare, until FNG compares this plan with what they can pull out of ConocoPhillips or somewhere else. So you can give them a range, but you won't get a commitment, am I? And without that commitment, how do you size the plant 3, 6, or 9? This, as you know, I don't need to tell you this, this just keeps, it's in a cycle. So I don't understand what you're going to say to those three folks or three plus folks in the middle of July that gets them a commitment that allows you to go forward with a $180 million commitment.
So I think the best way to answer that is that we've got legal counsel who we have a high degree of trust in, who have done a lot of plans like this in the past, and it's not lost on us the scenario that you're painting. And of course we're not going to commit resources or drive it to financial close only to have someone pull the rug out from under us at the last minute. So we'll lock them in, you know, and if they're not willing, we'll figure it out. It'll be a fair way, it'll be transparent, but if they're not willing to be locked in to a certain degree, given certain conditions precedent to closing, then they don't count. You know, there's no way you can do business otherwise. So we hear you, and that's exactly right. We'll make sure that that scenario is not going to happen.
I mean, I guess what I would say on that area, as we communicate to these people, and as we've always said, even as I get the dead horse going back to the legislature, at the point in time, we have to have commitments for us to go forward with the project. As we tie that range down, and if there's an entity that says we have better options and we're going to keep those open, our size of the plant and how we go forward is going to be based on them not making that commitment. And then they would have to go forward and how they finance other items based on them truly believing that they could go to another source and get gas. We can't close, as we've always said, without them saying we want North Fork gas, and if it's in a range in Fairbanks of, again, throwing out numbers, 1150 to 9, then that's the decision that entity is going to make during this period, and we will have to go forward or not go forward, the board, based on their decisions. And I think we're going to, and Corey's been in discussions, that's going to be communicated to these entities, and already has. I assume Marie is, are you going to have Marie come up at all today, Chris?
Amy.
Oh, God. Wrong person.
She's our secret weapon.
She came in with Mike.
But anyway, decisions have to be made if we're going to go forward, and every one of the utilities is going to act like a business and make their decisions and commitments based on that narrowing of that price range. And again, as we were very flexible in how we put the criteria around those notes that we just passed, that gives them the option. They can weigh, for example, F&G, can weigh how much they get on 3-2% interest at for this amount versus going to a regular loan at 6%. And we assume that those businesses are going to make their decisions based on going through that analysis.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And that's my discomfort, is that we don't know that until this project has a price that they can sign up for.
And I think we're going to have a good range in July, but there will be that narrowing of that range through the process of the financial close. And I guess this person to discuss this.
Go ahead, Corey.
You know, and I'm sorry, I just got to go back into a little bit of history here, and that's always dangerous. But, you know, Golden Valley had told the governor, if you gave us $200 million, we'd take the completion risk and the operational risk, and we go forward and do this project. And the decision was made for Ada to receive the funding that the governor was told by somebody would work. And you've been given these tools, right? So what you've got is you've got this plan now that you've come forward with, and it's got this dynamic to it that every utility is going to pay the same price for this gas, and kind of no matter when they sign up for it. So this comes to your question. How are you going to get someone to sign up for this gas? Why should they sign up? Why should Golden Valley sign up and do a take-or-pay contract when I'm going to pay the same price if I don't? And I think as we go forward on this concession agreement, that's a big issue for discussion of the model that has been designed by ADA so far. It does not get any incentive to sign up to do a take-or-pay contract. You've given FNG a little bit of incentive, because if they don't sign up for take-or-pay contract, they're going to have a higher interest rate. And that might make the difference for them that they're going to sign up for a half a B, because that was the commitment. But Gary, I think the question you're driving at is, how is this going to work? How are we going to get someone committing to pay for this project so the investor will put their money in when you've got a model that says it doesn't matter when you sign up? So we understand that problem, and we think that part of the answer to your question or your what you're thinking here is it's going to be that, okay, you're going to have to sign up now to get this price, or we're going to see what your price is if you wait. And that might cause someone to think twice. The other thing you've got is right now anyway, it could change tomorrow, there is no long-term supply gas contract really available from the Cook Inlet. Conoco will not give a contract. It's a come. If we got it, you can come up to our rack and pick it up and take it. There is no commitment, and they don't seem at this point, from what I hear, willing to do anything different. And that can change, any day. But everyone's waiting to see what you can export from the Cook Inlet, and we can get a much higher price. So, and that's the other difference between the Cook Inlet gas and the North Slope gas, at least under our gas contract, is it appears at this point to be significantly cheaper on the North Slope than in the Cook Inlet. So with all those factors going forward, we're optimistic that this schedule, could work. But for everyone who's kind of sitting there thinking this is pretty ambitious, I'm there with you.
Thank you.
Mike White?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just going to say, Corey, thank you for that, because your point about the incentives are really important for the board to understand how those drive the behavior of people in the project. And I just hope we're not too locked into a model that doesn't allow data and
to go back. Let me just comment that I think Mr. Borgeson wasn't at the whole meeting last time. He was very busy. So that is absolutely in discussions, and you're in and out, Corey. There's a capital stack issue, which is privileged, but we are discussing ways in which to encourage people to sign up.
And Mr. Chair, I don't offer that as a criticism. I offer it as an important, because there's going to be different things that come up, and I've got confidence in our staff and it's going to be working on. I just don't want to see us get locked into things until we can get there. It's important for the board to hear those, and I appreciate you bringing it out of the meeting.
And I guess what I would say, Chair, just as we go forward, is that our commitment and the direction that we had was to do the best we can and the best type of pricing structure for the preferred customers to ensure that any money that we invest, whether it's low cost because of what they gave us, the deferral of interest and principal to whenever, make sure that that benefits the preferred customers. And that's the pricing model that, as we were negotiating and working on the concession agreement, we kept coming back to, is that we want to ensure that the monies that the legislature put into this are going to be passed on to the preferred customers. And I think Rick and Chris and their team heard that from me about every half an hour, that as long as we're ensuring that the preferred customers are getting the best price. So it doesn't mean there can't be an incentive or a commitment to the people that sign up right now that they're going to get the best price. As more people, more preferred customers want to come in later, their price could be different based on the cost of that expansion of the plant. So I want to say we're not stuck to say that every preferred customer, whether they come in 2014 when we're doing this deal, they, instead of 2019, are going to be guaranteed price, same price. We're not married to a model. We're just married to the commitment that our money that the legislature gave is going to be to the benefit of the people that the legislature said it was supposed to be.
Go ahead, Corey.
One more point that I was trying to make, I want to make sure it wasn't lost, is that at one point Golden Valley said we'd take this completion risk and operational risk. I think this eight has taken that. That is a real significant point of the negotiations going on here. And, you know, you as a board want to protect ADA, and we understand that. But there's a certain role here that ADA's taking on as part of this interior energy plan, and the risk probably rightfully belongs with you. So that is something that we're struggling with.
Just FYI, I assume, Sherry, that there's going to be, we're going to have something at lunch at noon. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go until roughly noon, then we'll take a quick break. And maybe, I don't know, depending on what the board wants to do, if we want to eat while the presentation is going on. But there'll be at least a 15-minute break at noon.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any more questions? Yes.
Go ahead, Chris, continue.
Yeah, if there are no more questions,
can I just add one comment? I'm seeing the background here. I do think I agree with what Corey said, but there's also a lot of risk on the WH's part. And in this project, from the beginning, we're doing everything at our cost until closure. And I think your comments on the schedule are very, very valid. We recognize it's an incredibly tight schedule. We know the governor's made commitments to Fairbanks and the interior, but we also believe that we have got to get to this schedule quickly. So what we're going to need, and we have these discussions as a team, Ted and Ada, is we have to have collaboration. We have to push these things through quickly because our tolerance, we've spent significant money today invested, and we will spend more as this goes forward, but we have to get to point. Critically important.
If no other questions, I'll
you can see
on.
That our CEO's here to look at where his investment's going right now.
Yeah. I'll move on and talk about the system integration part. And I think, so you can go ahead and go on to the next slide. I think one of the important points I'll use to segue is that, you know, when you talk about people being willing to enter into a process where there's increasing levels of commitment, even though you're not going to know exact amounts until the end. One of the things that, you know, the IEP has been going for a while here, and a lot is known, right? There are a lot of people who know a lot about this, you know, project and the intent. And the parties at the table that we're talking to, they've all, you know, the community of Fairbanks wants the gas. People want this to happen. Right? We are engaged with parties who want to move forward. And so that tailwind is critically important. And we work very hard at bringing folks to the table and talking about, okay, how is this going to work? Because we think buy-in is very important, both from from a stakeholder perspective, but also from how is this thing going to work and what's the best way for it to work? And what's the lowest cost, lowest risk, optimum balance between CapEx and OpEx? What does that look like? Because it's one system, and that is the intent of the IEP system integration. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit right now. I won't go into a lot of further description about the intent of the integration and kind of cut more to what's going on and what's planned. Unless anybody has any questions, I'll just go right into that. And Ted, if you could go to the next slide.
I've got one sure question, Chris. I noticed you've got storage and regas in North Pole on that.
Actually, this graphic was put together to kind of represent the concept. At the time, that was a thought. the project evolves, that's not a foregone conclusion. I would encourage you to view it as a graphic representative of the, you know, the system elements. On the IEP, a number of things have been going on. It started back later in March, around March 20th, where we kind of set up the group, got buy-in from parties, talked to the utilities. That continues. I know that I don't want to speak too much for Corey here, but there are ongoing conversations between the utilities themselves. We are engaged on a regular basis with them to run down the issues of, you know, demand, of what it's going to take to serve that demand in terms of how much gas is going to have to be produced and how is it going to be delivered, and that informs questions of storage. Those activities are ongoing right now. We've had, in addition to the effort to kind of set the group up and get it going, we've had three technical working workshops that April 2nd, May 7th, and then on May 30th. We have another one planned on June 26th. And then there have been two modeling workshops where the technical model that basically optimizes the balance between a plant and how it operates and the storage. There have been two workshops on that. In April 20th and April 29th. So that's what's been kind of going on. We anticipate providing what I'll call draft recommendations, which, even though they're characterized as draft, you know, the parties involved are all participating in producing that deliverable, and so it's more of an opportunity to put it on the table and then let, you know, kind of executive level decision makers say, okay, what is this telling us? And what is it telling us about how the business case about how to move forward? Should we form an entity to do trucking? Should we form an entity, is MWH best to do it? Is a utility best to take it because of tax credit issues or, you know, credit in lieu of tax issues? Those are kind of the business case decisions that can be made. And the intent is that because the parties are involved and it's not like new information that's sprung on anybody on the date that the draft is produced, that we'll be able to get to a final version of that, a consensus on a path forward fairly quickly. And that's what that second business case final recommendations at the end of July, so roughly a month to get through that. And then from there, the bottom orange line is the, okay, so now we know what we're going to do, and that plan will be carried out. And at this point, we don't know exactly. We don't want to prejudice what we think that might be at this point, so it's shown as an orange bar. But again, the intent is to, by the time we get to close, have enough information and knowledge about cost and risk and all that will allow people to enter into, you know, commercial agreements or contracts by the closing date.
Susan?
So on the trucking and storage, is this a fair characterization that as we're going through this process that we've been over the last year and intensifies over the next 3 months, that we're going to be sharing information that we're learning with the key parties, but on trucking and storage, at this point, we're not anticipating ADA investment in this, but it's about how we optimize the system and make sure people have the information, or is...
Yeah, so just to make sure I heard you correctly, you're wondering about is a decision going to be made that involves ADA investment, and how would that all work?
To this point, I've thought that we need to understand how the system works together. We've got parties that are, you know, they have different needs, different perspectives, but that the trucking and the storage are going to be on the private sector side of the legislature, not on the ledger, sorry. One cup of coffee in 3 hours. Is that still, you know, that side of the ledger and we're over here, or is there's a possibility that this is blending
over the next few months?
You know, I would, you know, anything's possible, I guess. Yeah. I, there is a possibility of blending. The, you know, ADA participates in this process, and so I don't think they want to be very careful not to surprise anybody or go down a path that is kind of just not going to lead anywhere.
I would say with that, Chris, that our plan still is that may we be involved in financing storage through Stephens loans or through a loan participation program? Yes, just like we are with the storage for F&G. I do not see us spreading our ownership of whereas we are with the plant asset to that section. If that makes sense, so it's
well,
not.
Yeah, I think, Commissioner, the issue is that we will employ financial tools, maybe not from SB 23, to support the distribution storage, but probably not the trucking, although we are looking at a prototype issue on trucking to help out the system. So we mean to be involved everywhere we can to make it work. But it just won't be the SB 23 funds. Those are largely going to be going towards the bonding for distribution or into the plant.
But it could be bonding, could be for storage.
It could be for storage. So
that we will not have an ownership model like we do for the plant.
Gary?
Chris, could a deal like this get all the way to the end and close on a range of prices? No less than and no more than, and ADA participate if it's greater than the no more than? Are these kind of deals done that way?
I'm going to defer. I have an opinion about that, but I'm going to defer the about what's possible from a financing and so forth to Rick.
I would say, you know, it's a deal, so anything's possible, but at the end of the day, it's going to get down to, you know, ADA's going to be making the financial decision, and Northeast Investment Committee's going to be making the financial decision. And they're going to look at what's our return on this project and what's the risk, you know, that we won't realize that return. And to the extent that there's any twist in the deal like that that could threaten that rate of return, that'll affect their decision. If on the other hand, if it's actually upside protection or the risk is to the upside, as they say, then that's just that's better for them. So I think you know, you think like you're on an investment committee for a you know a fund investor.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the answer is maybe.
Exactly.
You know, I would say here on that
and here before her is the ant would be on the board. I mean, through this process right now, ADA or the board's direction so far to me, and I haven't heard anything different, is that we're working with the SETS fund, the SB 23 funds, the 125, the 57.5, and the 150 million in bonding to go for distributions and for the plant. And as we go through and know the cost, you're going to be making allocations based on that money. So the limitation so far has been based on that pool. Now, if the board wants to go past that and go into utilizing our revolving funds, that would become a completely different type of model that the board would have to look at on the risk allocation. Because, again, as we've always said, the legislature has given us, as I say, risk capital for this project through the SETS fund, with no direction on ADA having to use its own revolving fund, which has its own risk allocation. And then you get into all of the our own bond rating and those type of things. We've been very careful to carve this project out based on the funds that the legislature has given us to work through with.
And I guess, you know, to put my own flavor on, you know, to answer your question, there are a lot of very motivated parties. And I think that if nothing else, the group of people that we're working with, the utilities, ADA, MWH, Northleaf, Kiewit, for that matter, have shown what I find to be an amazing ability and willingness to look for, to figure out ways to get these done. And we have encountered things in time after time after time, we have come together, we figured it out, and we
moved on.
And it, and it's, you know, I think it's certainly possible, and I am not daunted by things like that.
Yeah. And you add to that the motivated parties of about 20,000 families.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, exactly. Absolutely.
But that attitude is why the board selected MWH to lead the apparatus project, that openness. And we saw the collaboration brought to the table. So, I mean, that's what the board's been encouraged by. And at least I have.
So. I'm glad it shines through. If no other questions, I'm going to kind of move us along. The set, if you want to take us to the next slide, it's just a transition slide. We're going to move into discussions about the plant itself, and with that, I'm going to hand it back to Rick.
So, Chair, you wanted to break at 12?
Well, roughly 12. If this is a good time, or after this,
That actually, you know, we could probably get through these two slides pretty quickly, and then all we have after that, before 12, and then take a break, and then Kiewit could come in after that and talk about the early works activities, and that would wrap up our presentation.
Okay, agree with that? Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay, so this is a slide that we've shown before. It's just the project company and the different, how the different actors in it come together. Northern Lights Energy is a project company. The gas supply agreement would be assigned to it. The offtake agreement would be with Northern Lights for taking product from it. ADA and the investor Northleaf both play financial roles. They're on the top. ADA is also working in part with the EPC activities, which is also being overseen by Northern Lights, and then we're going to be procuring operations activities as well through that project company. So I'm going to next slide, unless there's any questions. This would be the last slide before lunch. I always like to let people know. So this is the commercial agreements, and this is basically the development activity. And when Alan talked about, you know, that we're on risk putting all this together and about 600 other things. But these are really the trophies in the case after development's done. And I think I would like to use this moment too that we've got a lot of folks here from MWH, and just they weren't all recognized at the beginning. Monique Garbowitz and Dennis Ahrens are working hard on the operations and EPC contract. They're based out of our Anchorage office, and we'll be going through that in a minute. Offtake agreements, Amy Broughton. Frank Roach is our consultant working on the operations side for this as well. And then Jim Kuchen is our executive in charge, reports to Alan and oversees what's going on. So those folks are all engaged heavily in development activities along with other support staff that we have working with us. And that all adds up to, at the end of the day, financial close, because we'll bring all these agreements together. The LOI, as you know, was signed in early February, laid out a term sheet that some of the terms that were agreed to back then have obviously been modified as we've moved along, but that'll be reflected in the concession agreement. The concession agreement started out as a project development agreement, as you know, and now we've transferred it or morphed it into a concession agreement. And we expect to have that ready for signature at the end of June, and the milestone is up here for that. The gas supply agreement is one that we've talked about quite a bit. That's in ADA's court right now. If we are to have a second gas supply agreement, and we've targeted June 30th for completion of that so that we can lock that in. The JDA is the agreement amongst the partners in the project company. That would be Northleaf, Golden Valley, and MWH. That has been under negotiation. As soon as we finish the concession agreement, we can focus our legal and other resources on finalizing the JDA. And then finally,
Rick, who are the three players again?
It's Northleaf Capital,
okay.
Golden Valley,
okay.
And MWH.
Okay.
And then finally, as we mentioned earlier, the concession agreement will have conditions precedent to closing, and so we've symbolize that with the milestone in mid-October for clearing or finalizing all conditions precedent. As we talked about on the offtake agreements, that's an ongoing progress. I think we beat that dead horse.
I think
so. We'll let that one lie finally. And in the operations contract, we had an EOI period that was completed in mid-May. We're currently preparing the RFP based on that.
We'll have a bid period starting shortly in early June based on that RFP, and then we'll have a selection process that should get us to a selection of an operator by the end of July. At that point, we can start developing the OPEX costs, and the operator will be coordinating with Kiewit to make sure that they're interacting and understanding what kind of plant's being built so they can develop the appropriate cost structure and protocols for that. And all of that will continue to be updated until we get closer to financial close. The EPC contract, we have drafted the terms and conditions. Those are being negotiated now along with the scope for Kiewit. We'll get to a final cost and schedule on that in late September, early October, and execute that contract, which we've shown here as being pretty much the last thing you do, assuming the offtake agreements are in place and all the other agreements that we're talking about here, to get us to financial close. That's the roadmap in a nutshell. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anybody think about it for a minute, Floyd?
You know, just that slide might be the slide that you lead with. If we ever do this again, but that sort of takes the big pieces and then you start on the small pieces with this.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how I see it.
That's my favorite slide.
Just the top.
I'm sorry, on which slide
this
do you lead with?
This one.
Slide 12 just seems to me to be the one that you kind of lead with. And then you.
In fact, whenever we start a project like this, this is the first diagram that we draw.
Well, I was referring to slide 12, that one.
That one. Critical path.
Oh, this one. Oh, sorry. Okay.
That just seems to be, it's big chunks. And then you drill down to the smaller. So that's just a personal comment.
Okay, are there any questions from the board at this point? I don't think MWH is leaving, so I assume that there may be some more questions in the future. So we'll take a break right now. I assume if you want to work through lunch. Okay, so we'll start back in at about 12:15. Okay.
What is this? It's like I got the peanut gallery here.